Andy Reid. They went down the field in four plays, and there's a touchdown. They lined him up out in the slot, Gronky.
But he may be the biggest difference maker in the NFL.
No question. Right. They got nothing. They've got nothing. They are beat up, the whole deal, and they are going to win this game rather easily.
They kind of sacrificed home field resting guys at the end, but they managed to survive, and now they've got Gronkowski pretty healthy, and they managed to keep Brady upright.
That's exactly
right. That's all that matters for them.
No, it's all that matters, because they'll go into either place, either team next week, if it's Pittsburgh or Denver, and they'll win. I'm convinced of that after seeing this today.
Denver's really good defensively. Denver doesn't give
very
the ball
good.
Away. They'll have a chance to win. Denver's very good defensively.
I agree with that. But we've been saying that for years, and, well, they haven't gotten a lot out of it. Let's go to the phones. But they remind me of the Giants that won the Super Bowl a couple years ago with, ironically enough, a Manning at quarterback. They can really rush a passer, which at this time of the year spelled doom for you. I think Pittsburgh obviously is in a lot of trouble tomorrow, but who knows. Let's get our next call in. Hello and welcome. It is Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime, and you're up next. Hello.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, welcome in.
You can keeping it warm out. Guys, Tennessee wins a road game. Kentucky loses. Duke loses. Pretty hard to have a better day. It would have been more perfect if somehow Kansas City could beat these slugs, but...
I know, they're disgusting, aren't they, Don? It's like...
Totally disgusting.
This guy and Nick Saban are two repulsive people. And they're just winning.
Well, they worked. Saban used to work for Belichick.
Correct.
Oh yeah.
Correct. And I love what Glanville started both of them. And Glanville said about Saban, he said, I didn't teach a guy not to smile.
Oh man, I tell you, I'm still sick over Monday night.
Sickening.
Without that. Perfectly executed onside kick. You know, they lose that game. But, oh, well. That's the way it goes. Going back, I'm going to be watching the game. I've only got to see bits and pieces because I could not see it today. When I walked in, my wife had been watching the second half, and she was on pins and needles. I walked in the last seconds of the game because of the way they had, managed to squander the lead again. But, you know, I'm not going to be overly critical of them because of their deficiencies. I still think if Lamont Turner was playing point guard, we'd be looking at a possibility of an upper league finish on the periphery of the NCAA tournament. Because he's not going to Kansas or Kentucky, he don't get to play. What say you?
What do you say, Hatfield?
I mean, that's one of those things.
I mean, it's just amazing that they can get pro players, people that's been getting paid to play and no problem. And then, you know, you got a kid that's already proven the first semester of school he's capable of. But in fact, I know Tennessee didn't continue to push, but the appeal was already in. And I don't think they ever decided nothing. I mean, they're going to take as long on him as they are on North Carolina, aren't they?
Barnes knew it.
Yeah. And we're still waiting for North Carolina. What's his name, the coach over there, will he have to retire or die before
That's what, Keith, you're hearing he's quitting, right? He's after this year.
I think everybody in Chapel Hill would be thrilled if they managed to cash it in, win it this year, and Roy retires. I think that would be the optimal scenario for those folks.
No, my optimal scenario is that happening, and then they have to vacate it. But they, I guess if you win it, you don't worry about the vacating down the road.
They're never going to vacate a championship.
No.
If Mario Chalmers doesn't make that shot, nobody gives a damn about Derrick Rose's SAT score.
Right. You got it. Well, Keith, I want to get your opinion on South Carolina before we get around to playing them later down the road. I haven't really sat down and watched them, but, you know, looking at their record, and they seem to be formal. How did they get their hat handed to them so bad Wednesday night?
They didn't make any shots. They came out incredibly cold, and they're not a great offensive team. I mean, I think one of the bizarre stats is they're averaging close to 80 points a game going into Wednesday, and they're not a great offensive team. They've overperformed offensively, but I mean, they're a veteran team for the most part. They've got a bunch of guys that have been there a while. So then, I mean, if you're not going to have one and done great players, you might as well have a bunch of juniors and seniors, and they've got that, son. They're good. They're not great. I mean, they're a team that they might win a game in the NCAA tournament. I don't see them playing on the second weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, I'm just happy to finally get a win. And if he really can play some defense, I'm beginning to think outside of punter, Mostel is the best player on the team, Keith.
He just doesn't, I mean, let's be honest. His basketball IQ, it's a struggle, bro.
He's not the only one. I mean, there's some, this team makes some passes that just completely mystify me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we kind of pass the ball through people.
And we've done it, and we've pretty much done it this year, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing it for 2 years. We were terrible handling the ball last year.
Yep.
I mean, maybe that's what's the matter with the Lady Vols. I tried to watch them the other night. And
oh, my gosh.
They're a turnover machine, and maybe they've been watching them in practice. I don't know.
Don, what's going to happen there?
I don't know. I've got a buddy I talked to today. He's a big basketball guy, and he said he don't really think it's all the bad coaching that he's doing as much as that he thinks you got a bunch of, you know, McDonald's All-Americans that really don't fry, don't think they have to, and they feel privileged, and they don't put out. I mean, how does a team go beat two undefeated teams back-to-back and then come home and play like that?
But that's not what that program was founded on, though.
Oh, no. It's embarrassing.
So that is coaching.
If I was her coach, I mean, you know, a woman's basketball coach making the money she's making, it's hard to walk away from it. But
that's right. And that's why she took the job. She doesn't look to me like she's all that interested in it, to be honest with you.
No.
It's not killing her. Let's put it that way.
And I don't know how many really good women's basketball coaches there is. And
right.
It's always been said in women's basketball, if you got the best player in the country, you can win it. You look at some of the UConn teams. You look at the Parker teams. We won those two back-to-back last championships, Pat did, because she had the best player in the country.
Correct.
And now look at Baylor. Where's Baylor?
Correct.
Since they quit playing a man at center.
Correct. And she was the man, by the way.
Yeah. If I thought it was just a joke when she bowed out of playing Olympics again after she graduated.
No, what about the thing about the girl she broke up with getting pregnant and they thought it could have been her kid?
Yep.
I mean, you can't make that up. I'm not trying to be, in this world we live in today, you know, I mean, you look at Bruce Jenner long enough and he looks good to you. You know what I mean, Don? You're out of here. 865-200-5402. Keith, you caused me to detonate Don. Why?
I didn't cause you to detonate Don.
He irritates Jimmy Himes, I was told here on the Facebook. No, what's this app I'm on called, Keith? The Periscope. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah, you're on the Periscope.
Let's go to the phones. 865-200-5402. Tennessee wins today. 80-75, the Vols, a game over 500 in the league. A quality win for our Volunteers. And as we say in the trade, it is all quality. It is all quality. If you were UNLV and you had a choice between Bruce Pearl, who's trying to get that gig, or Rick Pitino, who's trying to get that gig, who would you take?
For a school that's been incredibly image conscious, I think you have to take the obvious Hall of Famer. I mean, Pitino gives you more gravitas. I think you go with Pitino.
Isn't he a washout, though, at this point?
Well, Louisville's still pretty good, and they got a great recruiting class coming in next year. I mean, it's not like their on-floor results have fallen all the heck.
Who's in his tree, or who would they go after, you think, if that Louisville job opened?
Oh, it's like telling me Louisville would go after. I mean, Church and Larry Eustace are really tight, but I think Eustace's been good at Colorado State, but I don't think he's been good enough to merit getting the Louisville job, so.
Back to the phones we go. Let's get our next call in. 3:30 to go in the game. Kansas City driving with the football as they try to get back in this thing. Need a touchdown here. Next call in. Hello and welcome.
What's up, Tony and Keith? How you guys doing?
Hey, who's this?
It's Ashton Jackson.
Hey, AJ. Good to talk to you, man.
It is good to talk to you guys. That was a quality win on the road today, guys. I completely agree with Bino.
From what respect? That's kind of a broad subject.
I mean, I think Mississippi State has more talent than we do. Malik, they got some dogs that will hunt.
Keith, you don't believe that, do you? They've got a guy inside that can play. They do not have a better team than we do. No way.
Well, Sword had a bad day, but I mean, I would probably take him on a consistent basis. I'd take him over any of our wings.
What about Malik Newman, Keith?
Yeah.
Their backcourt's not in our class. So we have three guys in our backcourt better than anybody they have in their backcourt. Come on.
We don't have a point guard. Our tallest player is Derek Reese, though.
Oh, I understand that. I'm ceding to you.
Yeah, I like their roster. I probably like their roster better because it's actually balanced. I mean, we're essentially a 6'5" and under. What was that old league, Tony? The World Basketball League or whatever?
Yeah. The UBL.
Yeah, we're set up to be a really good UBL team.
To our caller, Action Jackson, I need to explain something to him. There is a move afoot in basketball because the big man's disappearing. That teams are playing with three or four guards and are winning and being successful. And so we have three guys in our backcourt better than anybody Mississippi State has, and it's a guard dominated game.
Whoa, are you trying to tell me Devin Bachman is better than Craig Sword?
No, I'm telling you that we have three guys in our backcourt better than anybody they have in their backcourt.
Which three guys do we have that are better than Craig Sword?
Well, Hubbard's a better player.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Did you guys watch today's game? Punter is a better player, and Mostel is a better player.
Oh, God.
Huh?
Oh.
No, wait a second. Wait. You can't say, Keith, that Sword is clearly better than Hubbs if Hubbs is motivated. You can't say that.
Well, he's never motivated.
I know, but you can't say. If he's not motivated, you can't say that, though. He's not clearly better.
Well, yeah, because look at their career results.
Malik Newman was the best five-star on the court tonight.
I'm not as enamored. Tony, but if we're going off of one game snapshot, then Kenny Gaines is better than anybody we've got in the backcourt, and so is the other guy, and so is J.J. Frazier.
Come on, guys. I mean, let's get real. We have more talent than them. It makes you and Bino feel better, and it makes Action Jackson feel, and that's okay. I'm glad we're feeling better. We have veteran leadership.
Leadership
doesn't mean
where's a senior and Craig Schwartz is senior.
Action Jackson, I saw a story that made me think of you recently on the History Channel.
Oh, yeah?
Underground New York. It's about all the sewers and cesspools, the whole city underneath. Now, hang on a second, because I know you love New York. There's a whole city underneath of New York, and if you get in one of these cars, you can literally drive around under the city, and there's roadways and just the whole thing. It's just the problem is there's a bunch of number one and number two down there, but there's a whole grid underneath, and the way the city's laid out was very interesting, Action Jackson, and I thought of you.
Well, it's funny you bring up New York, because the soccer deal at 2 World Trade Center just fell through.
The what, Dad?
The News Corp deal at 2 World Trade Center fell through. Silverstein needs a new tenant. But I have two things on the way out. Steve Forbes. He's my favorite coach in college basketball for two reasons. He coaches at my undergrad school, and he likes Lane Kiffin.
Who does?
Steve Forbes.
Can I ask you something on the way out?
I got one more thing to say, and then you can. Keith.
Yes,
sir. I talked to Uncle Luke from Two Life Crew on Periscope the other day, and he said he's going to put Luke Records back on the map in 2016. Be on the lookout.
Wait a second.
I hope so.
Wait a second. What?
That'll be sounds Trick Daddy. I want an all Miami label. I want like DJ Khaled, Trick Daddy. Maybe see if Black Rob will come on board.
Do you remember some of the hits? If we live long enough, you know that, hey, we want some, you know, that could be like an oldie one day. That could be like an oldie on your oldies channel.
Maybe a QBB can spin it.
Yeah, QBB on wax, no less. You think Action Jackson has any idea what we're talking about, Hatfield?
I think the WQBB days probably predate him, Tony.
AJ, can I ask you something?
Absolutely, Tony.
When you look at Lane Kiffin, do you get flush in your face? Does blood rush to certain areas of your body?
No, Tony. He's just a good football coach. I think he's been treated unfairly. He's my boy.
Would you date with him? If given the opportunity, would you date with him? Would you double date with him?
Absolutely.
Okay. I might be able to arrange that.
That sounds good, Tony. Yep, you got to take it easy. Enjoy the show.
Is he going to UCLA, Action Jackson?
Absolutely not.
He's not going anywhere.
I mean, he might go to San Francisco to Chip Kelly, but that's only if he's forced out of Alabama, I'd say.
Did you cheer for Alabama in that championship game?
I may have uttered the words Roll Tide.
And I may have uttered the words, you're out of here. 865-200-5402. Is he for real?
What do you mean?
What do you mean, what do I mean? I'm asking you if that is for real. Was that for real?
I have no reason to think it's not.
No. Action Jackson. Let's go back to our phones. I want to remind you, this is your Smart Way Garza Law Firm, Tennessee Basketball Overtime. My name is Tony Basilio of TonyBasilio.com. Keith Hatfield is joining us fiber optically. Tennessee wins today. The Vols back at it with Vanderbilt next time out. You'll be able to see us 6:30 on Tuesday nights. You can hear me weekdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. All shows logged, and fun stuff. We're back to doing book corners, Keith. I got 3 book corner interviews this week. Keith has his program on Friday afternoons, Holding Court. He's got the best guest list in the world. I'm going to go back to our phones, get our next call in, and to our next caller, speak a little bit. You and Hatfield, I got a wee-wee. Let's go to the phones. Hello and welcome in.
What's up, Tony? Bobby.
Hey, welcome. Go ahead, man.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit to you. I got a funny, but Keith, why can't we defend the three? Because we're crashing so much into the middle to defend the big men with our shorter guys.
We're not very smart. I mean, the one that Witherspoon hits at the end of the game.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of.
It's just because Hubs isn't paying any attention. I mean, that wasn't. I mean, he was essentially in position. He's just not paying attention. And that lack of attention to detail. That's how you blow a 9-point lead down the stretch against Texas A&M. That's how you give up 31 points in 10 minutes to Georgia in the second half Saturday or Wednesday.
If Hubs had half the intensity of, let's say, Armani Moore. Or some guys that have come before him, or half the heart of a Chris Lofton, would he be an NBA prospect? Would he already be in the NBA?
I mean, he would certainly. Well, he'd at least be an all-league caliber player in the SEC. And he just some guys just don't have it in them. I mean, Scottie Hobson didn't. I mean, some guys just don't have that.
He reminds don't have it. So much of Scottie Hobson.
Yeah, I mean, some people just don't have it in them, and you just. I think at this point, Barnes is stuck with the realization that he's probably one of my 5 best players. And you have to quit worrying about what he could be and just get what you can out of him as what he is and go from there. I think that's where they're kind of stuck with Hines. He, I mean, the roster's shorthanded enough. I'm pretty sure that Barnes would be thrilled if a couple of the freshmen come in next year and can play that position, and then that way he can put some heat on Hubs to say, look, either you're going to get with the program or you can go be somebody else's problem.
Right. Yeah, and here's my other question. Do you feel like Shambari Phillips didn't play well today?
He was all right. I mean, he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great today. I thought he was a little anxious offensively. I thought he kind of drove into traffic a couple of times and got himself in some bad spots. But I think he's going to be all right. I mean, he'll be.
I didn't think he was great today, but
I didn't think he was bad. I mean, he was about what he's still kind of feeling his way. And I think Schofield's kind of hit the wall a little bit too. I mean, people have now got a scout on him a little bit. And people are really attacking him defensively. So I think he's got to make some adjustments now and kind of get his game back and rolling. But all in all, those guys, I didn't expect a great deal out of those. I didn't expect a great deal out of those two. I think they both met or exceeded expectations. I mean, Schofield certainly exceeded expectations, and Phillips has been good in some spots. I mean, he's been very good in some spots. So I think.
Your boy O'Neal about freshman Keith used to say that they're going to hit the wall at least three or four times during the year, and I think that's probably true. All freshmen go through periods where, because they're just not used to, they're just not even the physically gifted ones hit the wall. Look at Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, the only guys who don't hit the walls are your complete guys who shouldn't even be in, who are only in college.
Ben Simmons.
Yeah, the Ben Simmons is the world. They're like, I mean, look at Chet Jallo at Kansas. He's barely seeing the floor now.
Yep. I was not getting on Shambari Phillips as much as
I didn't think you would.
I was surprised that he didn't play a little bit more. Although I guess with Mostella playing as well as he did.
What'd you make of Woodson getting the time he got, Roberto, in that first half? What did you make of that?
Honest to God, hand to God, I have no idea. Do you think where is Woodson from? That's the only thing. He's a mid-state kid, isn't he?
Yeah.
Not from Mississippi, is he?
No, he must have some AAU teammates or something is the only thing I can come up with.
That or, you know, his parents made a sizable donation to the basketball program this week. I really don't know.
But this was the saddest person in the building when he came out was IJ Reddy.
That's the truth. And, Keith, you're right. I mean, there's nobody on our team that could compete with a Ware guy. I mean, I thought he was a great player. He surprised me at how good he was. And I think Ben Howland's going to get it rolling down there. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think Ware's just a really good college post player, and let's be honest, we don't even have any post players. I mean, Alexander's not strong enough to play down there yet. Kasongo, basketball knowledge, I mean,
Kasongo needs to go out for the football team. He looks like he plays football.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played that much basketball. I mean, at this point, his basketball acumen and understanding the game probably wouldn't fill a thimble. So that's kind of where you're at.
I'm gonna drop two things on you, then I'm gonna jump, guys. First of all, we were on the way home at halftime, and the game kind of kicked back on before I could get home. And this is not a joke. Bob Kessling comes on, and I look up in the rearview mirror, and one of the triplets has her fingers pressed deeply into her ears. It was a pictorial representation of Bob Kessling. He is the worst basketball guy I have ever seen, and I can't wait until next year.
I think he's good at basketball.
Really. Oh, Tony, come on.
I don't. Tony. No, I think he's pretty good at basketball. Okay. Keith, do you?
Well, I mean, I almost never hear him, so I don't really know. But I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, his main drawback is he's pretty much trained in television for a great extent.
It kills me, man. I mean, when he called Juwan Smith Julian Jones a couple of years ago, I literally wanted to pluck my ears off.
John Sweet just had a pretty good line. He said Bob Kessling today called a good game. He does, because a game, M N's and N words for M and M for N. And he said he caught a good game today. That's horrible. You're horrible, John Sweet. Horrible.
Is it? And
you're getting dumped on that. And no, it's stupid. I hate racism. Do you enjoy it, Keith?
What's that?
The kind of nonsense like what he just brought to the table.
Well, you know me. I'm from that Dan Levitard school. I don't particularly like white people.
Back to the phones we go. Let's get our next call in. The Patriots are trying to hang around, and to our next caller, I say hello and welcome in.
Basketball Keith. And Pop Tom Vasilio, what's going on, guys?
Hey, brother, welcome in.
All right, talking UT basketball. Before I do that, Tony, being a resident Philly fan that you are, what should I expect out of my 49ers next year with your boy Chip Kelly out in the Bay?
Horrendous hire. Guy's no NFL coach, man. He can't lead men. You'll see that. Not a good hire.
He signed a 4-year deal. Did you give him 2 years?
Yeah, your organization isn't going anywhere in a hurry, as you know.
Absolutely.
Harbaugh knew what he was doing getting out of there. That whole thing is so dysfunctional from the front office on down. But go ahead.
Yeah, as far as Tennessee basketball, I fell out of love with college basketball, man. I'm still a UT basketball fan, but it's so hard to watch Tennessee go out there and compete. When you don't have a point guard, no lead is safe. And when you're a jump shooting team like we are, it's just a matter of time before your opponent works their way back into the game. I mean, it's pretty much the same script, in my opinion, guys. No matter how many points Tennessee's up by at the half, you can't continue to knock down shots unless you're the Golden State Warriors. And eventually, our opponent is going to slow the game down. They're going to dump it down low because we don't have size. And it's going to put pressure on guys trying to pretend to be point guards. And there goes the ball game. Your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. Again, I don't know what Rick Barnes is going to do, though, because at the end of the day, there's really not much you can do. We know anybody big. My problem with them so far, or him, is that I don't see him enforcing that guys have to play defense. There's just not enough defense consistently played this year. And again, maybe that's because he's looking at it and going, you know what? We don't have, I don't have enough bodies. You know, you'd like to bench somebody, Keith, but who are you going to bench? Like Wednesday night, what were you going to do? You're going to pull everybody and just put, who are you going to put in?
No, I think that's the issue. I mean, there are structural issues with that roster that there's nothing you can do about. I mean, you can't make Armani Moore be 6'9".
And then the other thing, Tony, you talked about the defense, the lack of rotation in the half court. You make a big shot on offense and then turn around and give up just about the similar shot with less pressure on the defensive end. But, not getting back after missed shots. I mean, they teach you that, man, when you learn how to play the game of basketball as a little kid, you get back on defense, I mean, we're doing some things fundamentally that these guys should have already known, way before they got to UT.
We have some guys though that just don't have, how do I put this, Keith, mildly, tremendously high IQ, basketball IQs. Is that a good way of putting it, Hatfield? What do you think?
Oh no, I think I said the last game. I don't claim to know what he wants. Personal intelligence is, but I mean this team is pretty much basketball illiterate.
And guys, I heard y'all talk about some Miami. Keith, man, you've been looking at my playlist: DJ Cowie, Rick Ross, absolutely. Trick Daddy, Trina.
Absolutely, that's what I'm talking about. They need to get the 305 back up and running.
And before I get out of here, guys, my brother, I don't do a lot of girls basketball. My brother, he played basketball here in the city. Damn good basketball player, by the way. And, he trains some people down in Dallas. He does a lot of girls' basketball camps and stuff. And from what he was telling me, because he's had a ton of girls go and play college ball, and the Lady Vols have recruited some of their girls. They are an afterthought. And a lot of it has to do with Holly. I mean, they're just an afterthought. I think the number one player in the state, he was telling me, isn't even going to UT. I think she's going out of state somewhere. But they're not getting girls like they used to. Even here in the state, they play for the flight team. That's the big AAU squad. They're not plucking girls like they used to. But from what he was telling me, most of the top girls now, they don't look at, the Lady Vols as a destination anymore. Not when you got Baylor who's still kicking and some of those other teams, Notre Dame, UConn. Basically you've got a coach over there that people just don't believe in. And I think her roster don't believe in her either. And like I said, not to get too heavy on Lady Vols talk, but, my brother, he really follows it, cause he's close to it. But, basically they lost their teeth when Pat stepped away.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, here's the thing about Holly. I get a sense from her and talking to people around it. She probably really didn't tremendously want that job. But if they're going to come to you and make you an instant millionaire, what would you do? I mean, her design.
I won the lottery a couple nights ago.
Yeah, exactly. She hit the lottery. That's the point. And and she's recruited okay. But it's not up to spec, as we say in the trade. Hey, Jay, I appreciate you, man. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, have a good night.
Hatfield, give me a final thought here, and you're my man. It's been great having you, brother.
Well, I think it's a cute. It's a good win. Any road win this team gets is good. Obviously, now they at least should be able to go on the road with some confidence, knowing they've actually won one. And it's a big week coming up. I mean, if this team's going to have any postseason hopes, they've got to get at least one of the two tough home games this week. And honestly, given that how tough I think it's going to be for them to scrape out more than one, maybe two more road wins, they probably, if they're going to make the postseason, they probably need to get both games this week.
Yeah, they need to. And it'd be nice to get one back, right? So at this point, let's get a game back. I mean, it could happen, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vanderbilt's kind of a 500-ish team. I mean, I think they're better than that. I think they've underachieved a little bit. Cornette being hurt kind of stunted their growth early in the season. Now he's back, and certainly they've got size that Tennessee doesn't have, so that's certainly a problem in that matchup. And South Carolina's got size. But, I mean, South Carolina showed Wednesday night in Tuscaloosa that – they're not infallible. So Tennessee come out, and it's one of those noon starts we talk about. I mean, Tennessee almost clipped A&M because of that early start.
Yep.
I mean, early Saturday starts on the road in college basketball when you've had to travel any distance at all, is never any good.
At the very least, I want a 1-1 week. I would like a 2-0 week. And Keith Hatfield, we're always undefeated, brother, and we get a chance to spend some time together. That was a lot of fun tonight. Thank you, brother.
Always is, Tony.
Thank you, man.
Okay.
The great Keith Hatfield. I want to thank my friends at Smartway, online at smartway.net. And I also want to thank the Garza Law Firm, as it was great having Keith on here, tncriminallaw.com, for your Garza Law Firm. I'm going to leave you with something musical on the way out, and then my Kansas City Chiefs are going to be victorious here down the stretch. Let me see if I can stick my mic out, and you tell me if you can hear that. Can you hear that in the, you probably don't want to hear that, but can you hear that out there? Can you hear it? one more, and then we're going. But this is like a little pop jazz thing we've been working on. And I'm going to play this live. I think we're playing next weekend out at the, where is it? The, let's see. Casual Pint Fountain City. Casual Pint Fountain City next Saturday night. I'm going to leave you one more. And this is something we've worked up. It sounds better with a guitar, a little accompaniment, but I'm going to play it for you anyway. And you'll get the gist. It sounds pretty cool on a mandolin, which is kind of a neat instrument. I like the versatility on it. I was playing some jazz on this thing this afternoon, just kind of trying to get the feel. And here we go. You'll enjoy this. See if you can name this song. See who the first person is that can name this. Are we ready? I'm trying you. I'm testing you. Hang on. Try it again. Jackson, I'm going to slide you. And then a little bluegrass for the road. Here we go. What does a song go? I'm trying to think here. thank you. Love you. Have a great night. That was a lot of fun. Go Kansas City Chiefs. Let's make some history. Hey, thanks for being there. Spread the word. And I hope you have a great night. Thank you.
Like the quintessential example that I always cite is she made this movie where she played a nun who fell in love with Elvis, who was a doctor. That is about as good as it sounds. I mean, it's a really it's kind of fun to watch, but it's really ridiculous. She also was in the notorious to this day flop on Broadway musical adaptation of Breakfast at Tiffany's. So she just wasn't feeling very sure of herself. And plus the fact that they did try to do something new. I think that's huge, and I think it's really admirable because that's what gave them part of their trouble, right? Like, they could have, once she got the deal from CBS to do the show, she could have just decided, and I think this is probably what they expected of her, honestly, she could have just decided to do a show where she plays an adorable housewife, except this time it's named after her instead of Dick Van Dyke, you know? And instead, they chose some slightly edgier producer writers to create the show for her, Grant Tinker and she actually were the ones who picked James L. Brooks and Alan Burns, who, you know, weren't Carl Reiner. They weren't big names with lots of traditional comedy experience behind them. They were just working on this show called Room 222, which, you know, was acclaimed but not a huge rating success, and it was a little bit modern and edgy. It was about a high school history class that tackled real issues in high schools, and it had African-American lead. So I think that alone was what kind of ended up causing them some of their troubles, because then they had to fight with CBS over every little thing for a while until they became a hit, and that's why there were so many problems, and that's why it's so admirable of them to have done something a little bit different.
And I think what's remarkable is they were getting pushback at the network level. You know, it wasn't like today where, oh boy, Mary Tyler Moore. I don't know who you would compare her today in the modern game. I don't know if
hard.
Yeah, it is hard. I'm thinking, and I know, but anyway, today she gets a push. Today there's all kinds of vehicles to push the program on. Back then, read your account of it from the inside. They're looking at it and they're going, they put us in a time slot where you go to die. They're thinking to themselves, the network brass, as you unpeeled this through your research, they were thinking, yeah, we'll do this for a year, maybe a couple, maybe we'll get a couple seasons out of it, and then we'll bid her adieu. Nobody thought, at least at the network level, they didn't think the show was going to be special, did they?
No, they really, really didn't. Especially, see, this is what happened, is once they got the script, or at least even the pitch, they were already kind of against it once the pitch happened, because this was a pitch where Jim Brooks and Alan Burns came in and suggested the divorce idea, and they absolutely loathed that at the network. And so once that happened, things started to kind of turn against them a little, and they didn't think these guys were the right guys to be doing the show, but Grant and Mary stuck with them. They really just wanted something more traditional, and it wasn't coming through for them. You know, if they read the script, and they said they just didn't get it because it didn't seem hilarious to them. And like I said, in that kind of like big, broad, like, why can't she just, you know, get into some kind of wacky scrape and then get out? Like Lucy, why can't she be stomping grapes or testing chocolates at the chocolate factory, which were wonderful, you know, landmarks of sitcomery at the time, but they didn't realize there was something else to be done, which was kind of more quieter and more character-driven and wasn't going to really jump off the page as, like, cartoonishly funny. So they were, and the drama involved that they got into their scripts from the very beginning, they were very good at combining kind of actual personal drama with comedy, and that seems so normal now, but they pretty much invented it. I always get nervous saying somebody's the first to do anything, because there's always something else somewhere. But I think they were definitely one of the first to do that on television and to do it with such finesse, and that was what was confusing. So, yeah, they didn't have the network on their side because the network just wasn't getting it in a really traditional way, and that's what they do, is they put you in a bad time slot, and then they ride out their commitment to you on a, you know, they'll commit to a certain number of episodes in a contract. And that was sort of the idea at first at CBS until there was a very fortuitous changeover in leadership at the network. And then that's when things really started to change for the show.
Yeah, and if that doesn't happen, we may never be sitting here talking about what in my mind is one of the classic pieces of American television for many, many reasons that you underscore, and then there are others, just chemistry, the cast itself, which we'll get into here in a second, as we visit today with the author of Mary and Lou and Rhoda and Ted, All the Brilliant Minds Who Made the Mary Tyler Moore Show a Classic. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong is joining us today on the program. And Jennifer, I go back to that time where it was still fledgling, the program. Not only does the is there doubts among the cast themselves and internally and the writers and everybody involved in it, including the star and the headliner in Mary Tyler Moore, who's doubting what she is, if what happened on the Dick Van Dyke Show was just fluky and that was just going to be her only thing because she had done several other projects that had bombed out, as you said. Then the press gets a hold of the pilot and the first couple of shows, I guess, and they write things like, you quote TV Guide back then as saying that she was unmarried and getting desperate about it. They called Rhoda a man-made klutz. The New York Times called the show preposterous. I mean, they're basically getting ripped from coast to coast, and then somehow they get through that. How did they go from this, the fledgling entity that they were, and gain traction? What do you think the secret was?
Well, I think it is such an interesting story, too. Like you mentioned, the early press didn't get it either, and I really genuinely believe that a huge part of that is the fact that the network was so against it early. And, you know, people who cover the stuff for a living, people who cover the television industry, they hear stuff. You know, they hear rumblings. They know sort of what the expectations are. And so once they start doing all their prognosticating for the fall lineup, they take all of that into account, and things start to go according to, you know, sort of the insider view. And so I don't think that they were even giving it much of a shot, because they just figured, like, oh, it doesn't even matter anyway. Like, this thing is not going to happen. Nobody likes this, so whatever. Also, I think it was partly because of what I was saying earlier. It's a different kind of show that at the time maybe took a little getting used to for some people. I do think, I'm a little baffled by those really bad reviews, because if you watch that pilot now, you will see a perfect pilot. A lot of pilots, even for good shows, are not great, because it's a notoriously difficult form, you know, especially for a sitcom, 22 minutes to do all kinds of things, to set an entire show into orbit and characters and plots and make you interested and all of this stuff. So it can be really difficult. If you watch, like, the 30 Rock, you know, pilot today, you're like, not quite there yet. But this is perfect. It's exactly what it needs to be. It tells you exactly how the show's going to be. The characters are there. I love it. But I do think, you know, maybe that's more to modern sensibilities than to people at the time. Once they got going, though, you know, things got more of a chance then, too, among audiences. There were only three major networks. So, you know, you're sort of held hostage by what is on the television to some extent, and that meant you could give things more than one chance. So people started watching at least a little bit, and then, you know, and the world wasn't in fact falling apart as the network had thought might happen to the show. You know, people weren't up in arms over the fact that there wasn't big broad comedy. They were kind of getting used to it. And then All in the Family started, too, and that was even more different. So there was clearly this tide turning, and then over time, those two shows actually kind of ended up working together and playing off of each other a little bit and building audiences over time. And then once the Emmys came up for that coming, you know, for the next year, both of them got nominations, and that really made people pay attention as well. And so it kind of was this slow build that you don't see as much today because of different mechanisms in place in the television industry. But, you know, by the time they got through their committed number of episodes, they were strong enough to get a full order of episodes and then keep going.
I thought the fact that they were kissing cousins with All in the Family was really interesting, and you fleshed this out, but there was a writer, who was it, a director, there was somebody who left Mary Tyler Moore's show to go to this program and said, hey, no offense to you guys, I know you're going to do okay, but I'm going over here. That had to really bolster their confidence as well on the front end, if you can elaborate on that.
Oh, yeah, there was a director who went and did All in the Family because that was, you know, they just felt like that was so different that, you know, you couldn't pass up the opportunity to do it even if it failed. But yeah, I mean, they that was kind of a bummer for the Mary Tyler Moore show at the time, but it turned out, you know, it's one of those things like all is well that ends well, and it turned out to be that once these shows have these really parallel trajectories and they kind of like really feed off of each other, and they represent these two very different kinds of new comedy at that time. And once they were on the same night, on Saturday nights together, and kind of like feeding off of each other's audiences, that really was where stuff started to gain momentum. And then, you know, we eventually get four years or so into the Mary Tyler Moore Show's run is when we have that incredible historic powerhouse of a Saturday night lineup with those two shows plus Carol Burnett and Bob Newhart and MASH, which, like, you know, it doesn't get any better than that.
No. I mean, you